You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network as we get set for tonight's NBA Game 5. The Golden State Warriors squandered an opportunity at perfection, yet they look to close the deal out tonight. Is it deja vu all over again? Again and again? We've been down this road last year, but last year, Draymond Green didn't play in this situation. Draymond Green will be playing. The question is, will Draymond Green actually play well? Because he hasn't been playing well in this series. Nevertheless, the Warriors are up 3-1. I think they will close them out tonight, but I thought they were going to close them out on Friday night as well. It was raining threes, man. It was an ambush. 24 three-point shots, NBA Finals record. It was a blitzkrieg. I would expect Golden State to be hitting shots tonight in the same way that Cleveland did the other night. We see time and time again, man, it's blowout city when these two teams play against each other. We're breaking it down with some of the best in the business. Steve Merrill's going to join us. We're running the gauntlet with Steve. We'll talk NBA. We'll talk NASCAR. We'll talk Major League Baseball. Coach Nick, bballbreakdown.com, will join us. It's kind of self-explanatory. We'll focus in on the game tonight from the coach's perspective. Then Paul Bovey will join us. We'll break it down from a prop and a betting and a total and a first half and a second half and everything else in between perspective. So we've got a lot of stuff to get to, all basketball on the show. I've been promising you that we're going to begin our football previews, and we are starting Wednesday. This Wednesday, we're going to start talking college football. We're going to begin our annual summer preview with Mark Lawrence, playbook.com's Mark Lawrence. Listen, some weeks are sexier than others. We go in alphabetical order through every major conference, all right? And there's like 12 of them. So sometimes you get the Sun Belt, sometimes you get the SEC. And, you know, even me as the host, I'm like, oh, God, it's Mac Wednesday this week. Oh, you know, there's a couple of conferences where it's like, all right, it sucks. But we're like the only program out there that can tell you, you know, we went through every damn team in college football throughout the summer. Just take some notes, write this stuff down. The futures have been posted. And honestly, we're really not all that far off right now from the start of college football, man. It's around the corner of the Michigan Wolverines and the Florida Gators. Big game in week 1.5, I guess. I don't know. You know, the first week on the 26th, there's like 4 or 5 games. Is that really a week? Does that really count? There's a bunch of crap. It's a bad games, too. But whatever. You know, the first full week is really the first weekend of September. Okay, congratulations to the Pittsburgh Penguins. You won the Stanley Cup. Was it aided and abetted by the National Hockey League? Yeah. Now, listen, I don't think that Gary Bettman actually, like, calls the referees and says, screw the Predators over. But that's exactly what happened all series long, man. They got screwed over. That was one of the quickest whistles I've ever seen in my freaking life. Like, seriously. Like, yeah, I've seen traffic cops with more leniency. Well, blue whistle. Like, yeah, would you blow the whistle that quickly if it was Crosby that would have shot the puck? I don't know. I mean, you blew the whistle so damn quickly, the puck, you know, you could hear the whistle as the puck is sitting in a crease. That changed everything in the game. You screwed the Nashville Predators. These guys work their entire lives for that one moment and is taken away by some jackass referee, some schmuck that's selling insurance right now. Like, really? You know, it's a disgrace. It's an embarrassment, okay? The Pittsburgh Penguins, though, they deserve the win. You know, they deserve the win. But it was a freaking embarrassment, man. Like, seriously, that changed everything. Like, everything. If it was 1-0 Predators, completely different game. They got screwed. All right. Well, it's that time of the year right now. I promise, football, it's not that time of the year. It's a good thing I don't wear makeup. Otherwise, my makeup would be melting right now. I believe I'm the only person that doesn't wear makeup here at the Fantasy Sports Network. I'm the only person that's naturally beautiful. I don't freaking need it. All right? So, anyways, the Stanley Cup Finals are done, and the Pittsburgh Penguins are your Stanley Cup champions. It's their fifth ever Stanley Cup championship. It's the third in the Sidney Crosby era. Now, never mind the fact that the Predators got screwed, and we know that they did get screwed, and to me, that was the biggest screw job in the Stanley Cup Finals since the Dallas Stars and the Buffalo Sabres when Brett Hull was clearly in the freaking crease. You know what? The Preds were the better team. But that's the cruel thing about hockey. Most sports, the better team will win. The Predators, for the most part, were the better team. But ultimately, you still got the feeling the Pittsburgh Penguins are going to find a way to win, and that's what they do. You know, the Penguins didn't look very good against the Capitals. Penguins were lucky to beat the Ottawa Senators. The only time the Penguins were actually dominant in the postseason was when they beat the Columbus Blue Jackets in the first round. Now, Sidney Crosby's already lived up to the hype. All right? Crosby's already lived up to the hype. He's already accomplished everything. If Crosby never wins again, whatever, man. The guy's got 2 gold medals, 3 Stanley Cup championships. I don't count a World Cup of hockey, all right? It's like winning a, that's like winning an NBA Hoop It Up or something like that. It doesn't mean anything, okay? I don't count that. But, we, you know, Crosby, the best player of our generation, and now Crosby really working his way into the all-time lexicons here. I mean, he gets one more, he's there with Gretzky, right? He gets 2 more, he's there with Messier, right? He's not all that far off right now. Matt Murray's a young dude. I don't, you know, Pittsburgh Penguins aren't going anywhere anytime soon. Crosby still has a lot of hockey left. But what I find interesting, and the thing that caught my eye the most about this, was the fact that the Pittsburgh Penguins win again. And it's their 3rd championship in the last 9 years. And there's been so much talk about how the NBA sucks and it's not competitive and we know who's going to win all the time in the NBA. But, oh, the NHL's wide open. Oh, yeah, is it? Is it really? Is it? Let's get to some facts right now, all right? You know, these are facts. It's simple numbers. The bottom line is, all right, the same 3 teams have won 8 of the last 9 Stanley Cups. Oh, yeah, it's wide open. Yeah, it's wide open if you're Chicago, Los Angeles, or Pittsburgh. With the exception of the Boston Bruins, when the Vancouver Canucks choked, like the chokers that they are, when they choke, that's the exception. Seriously, 3 teams have won 8 of the last 9 Stanley Cup championships. The Kings, the Hawks, and the Pens, with the exception, that one exception being the Vancouver Canucks. Let's look at the NBA. In the same span, the last 9 years, how many teams do you think have won in the NBA? 6. 6 teams. That's double what the NHL is. Ooh, the NBA is, oh, it's so predictable. Oh, we know who's going to win. Yeah, okay. Yeah, really. I guess, you know, this is a case where perception and reality are 2 different things. Look, in the last 9 years, the Lakers have won, the Mavericks have won, the Heat have won, the Spurs have won, the Warriors have won, the Cavaliers have won. And yeah, the Warriors and the Cavaliers are going to win again right now. Perception and reality, you know, they're not matching up. Let's look here. The only league without a salary cap, you know, and salary caps are communist, all right? I didn't know we lost a war to North Korea and we cap how much money we can make. The only people that like salary caps are owners because it caps salaries. That's all it does. It doesn't help anybody win. Have the Cleveland Browns ever won? Did they win without a salary cap? Did they win with a salary cap? If you're stupid, you're stupid, all right? So the only league without a salary cap, Major League Baseball, they've had 7 different winners in the last 9 years. How about the NFL? The NFL's had 8 different winners in the last 9 years. But, oh, I know, the NHL is the most unpredictable league of them all. So, listen, I still think the Stanley Cup is the hardest trophy in sports to win. But ultimately, don't tell me that, you know, it's wide open and it's unpredictable. Who the hell's going to win the Cup next year? Probably the Pittsburgh freaking Penguins, the Chicago Blackhawks. All right? It is what it is. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. All right, we're live. We're breaking down the NBA Finals. We've got some great guests on the program today. Paul Bovey, Coach Nick, Steve Merrill. It's hot as hell right now in here. And our boy Cameron too, Drew, is getting married. He's got his big bachelor party next week. And I understand he's giving away a TV. And what, a PlayStation, a TV? I hope you're giving away an air conditioner, actually, Drew. That's what we need, right? Give away like a power fan. I'm going to buy my own fan and nobody else is going to use it. I'm dead serious, too. Nobody's going to use it. I'm going to be like Mayo, locking up my stuff. Don't touch it. Don't look at it. I'm going to lock up my little fan. I'm going to have this fan blasting. Like, I don't have to worry about any hair blowing or anything like that either. Let's bring in Steve Merrill right now. What's up, Steve?
It's that time of year. It's hot. Hot yeah, everywhere.
Steve's picks are hot. My picks suck. I'm just hot. I'm just sweating.
That's right. We need,
no, my picks don't suck. I gave people tap rid on Saturday. Kentucky Belmonts. I hit Taprit, and I told people that Patch was going to place or show. Patch finished third, so it's not all bad. But you know how it is, Steve. We remember the losses more than the wins, right?
Yeah, actually, I had an exacta box that hit with that, and I had Gormley in a trifecta box. He came in fourth, so I missed the trifecta box by a single horse there. Hit the Preakness, though, at 12-1. So, you know, horse racing's tough because for the amateurs out there, the recreational players, you got to take a real long-term investment approach more than ever because, you know, you have a 12-1 in the Preakness. We had a 15-1 that didn't come through in the Belmont, but you go 1-1, you're still up a ton of money, and you hit a 12-1 and you lose
exactly
on the other one.
Right.
So, yeah, you got to, it's really about money management and long-term.
I had Always Dreaming in the Derby, had Always Dreaming in the Preakness, and then had Taprit yesterday. So, it's not too bad. Out of three races, I hit 2+600s essentially.
Right, exactly. That's all you need is one time out of three if you got a 5-1, you know, payoff on one of them.
I think we give people winners so much and take it for granted. Me and Cam both gave Taprit on Red Heat and Rage Radio on Friday night, and then as well on Saturday, I retweeted it out there. But I also gave people the Golden State Warriors on Friday, Steve. And that's what
I was with you.
That's what screwed me up. It really hurt my account. I can't lie.
Yeah, I mean, Cleveland was 24-45 from three-point range in game four. They were 31-104 in the first three games.
Let me tell you something, Steve. We have these prop tickets up here, okay? Like the sports lottery. They have these prop tickets. So they have, like, how many three-point shots will a team hit? And they have that prop on every game. So the Cleveland Cavaliers, every game has been 12.5, Steve. I lost a prop ticket the other night, and of course, it's the government. They're not giving money away. You got to bet three props. So it's like a three-team parlay. I lost because the Cleveland Cavaliers had 12 three-point shots.
Right.
Not 13. Yet the next game, they hit 24 of them. Like, how am I not supposed to hate society, Steve?
Well, I mean, a couple of things. First of all, we saw this in the NCAA tournament. I mean, how many, you know, that's a one-and-done scenario, so it's even more extreme. But, I mean, these NCAA tournament games are almost all decided by three-point randomness now. And the only thing a little surprising about Game 4 is that the Cavaliers played so well because they know the series is over. By the way, it is still over. It's over tonight, most likely. And so, hey, more power to them to come out and play well like that because I really thought it was a good spot for Golden State. Now, the line was inflated. It was 6 when we did the show. It did go down to 5.5 or 5 by tip-off, but it was 6 during the day. Tonight's line is now 8.5. They're back home, and it's only a 2.5-point difference. You know, 6 would have been 12 a couple nights ago. And, in fact, before Game 3, some of the offshore books had bettable lines on all the future games. And when Cleveland was a 4-point home dog in Game 3, the bettable line on Game 5 was 10.5. And now it's 8.5. So the line was inflated in Game 4. It's actually cheap now. And I thought it was a good situation for Golden State Game 4, but I think it's probably a better spot for him now, though, off the loss.
You know, Steve, it's funny because you said, you know, you're surprised the way Cleveland came out. I'm not surprised that Cleveland came out the way that they did, but I kept waiting for Golden State to wake up and start punching back and then sort of take over. All right, they're going to – I kept even, Steve, even late. It reminded me of the Carolina-Denver Super Bowl, where even late in the game, I'm like, Carolina can still come back. Like, they just need to make a play. And I always got that feeling that, hey, guys, Golden State, if you just make a couple of shots, Cleveland will fold here. They will choke. But it never got to that point. And like you said, Cleveland, we didn't want to celebrate on our floor. Yeah, whatever. Good for you. Now you got to fly to the West Coast, and now you're going to watch them celebrate on their floor. And I know it sucks for Golden State. They didn't get perfection. But they've also never won on their home floor before. The last 2 years, the series always been decided on the road, Steve. So the Cleveland Cavaliers are 4-0 straight up in their last four elimination games. The overs now 3-1 in the series. The overs are 47-30 with one push in the playoffs, 61% to the over. The Warriors now 12-4 to the over in the postseason. Cavaliers 12-5 to the over. This is one thing I found interesting, though. The under is 11-1, Steve, after a Golden State Warriors straight-up loss.
Yeah, and we talk about the Warriors defensively. We always say they're a better defensive team than people realize because they play at such a fast pace offensively. They give up a lot of points on defense. But if you look at points per possession, they're always one of the better teams in the league. Look at their three-point defense. On the season, they gave up about 32.5% against teams that shoot 36. Cleveland hit 53 in Game 4. And at home this year, Golden State's given up about 31.5% from three-point range. So Cleveland is not going to shoot 53% from three-point range on the road tonight. This is a Cavaliers team that's just, well, I think they're 27 and 23 on the road this season in all games. So, I mean, you look at the numbers, Golden State is a much better team. They showed that in the first three games. They shouldn't have won game three, and they still found a way. I was a little worried that they maybe wanted to clinch at home, but now we've heard all this talk about they wanted to win on the road. Plus, the fact they had that 16-0 streak on the line, I don't think they came in flat game four for that reason. I just think Cleveland came out extremely fast from three-point range, and Golden State just could never catch up. You're right about them not clinching at home, though. They did not do it 2 years ago. They won on the road, and then they blew games five and seven at home last year when they could have won the title. This year, game five, they have Draymond Green, although it was very close to him being out again. It was amazing how eerie that played out in game four, wasn't it?
Draymond Green, they played Hit the Road Jack. He's like, you guys played Hit the Road Jack. I didn't have to hit the road. He's like, you guys aren't very smart in Ohio.
Well, I don't know. Either that or the officials aren't very smart, because apparently everybody said that first technical was on him.
I know.
I don't know what was good. That was a very shady. You know, it's a 3-0 series. It didn't matter. Cleveland was up big in the game. Otherwise, that was very, very shady.
There was a shady goal disallowed last night in hockey.
I heard
about
that. Yeah, I didn't see it, but I heard about
real,
it.
Real screw job. And they had 100,000 people, actually, outside watching in the streets of Nashville. And, you know, we were doing a podcast. People were like, are they going to riot? And I said, nah, they won't riot in Nashville. They're not going to riot. Like, you know, in Montreal, they would riot. Vancouver, they would riot. Certain cities, they would riot. I think tonight, though, Oakland wins. There's probably going to be a mini riot tonight, Steve, with the win even.
Yeah, I mean, Oakland's definitely not Nashville. Yeah, Nashville's a pretty good city. I do that Friday morning hit for about a decade now, and it's I like Charlotte. I like Nashville. They're very similar cities.
The cops are going to be ready tonight. Like, they know. Like, even if they win, people are going to start smashing things up.
Oh, yeah. And I know that area well. We've got friends and family out in Oakland and L.A. I know people who live about 10 minutes from the arena, actually, on the BART system out there, the subway system out there. It goes right by it. And Oakland's got some shady parts. Let's put it that way.
All right. So sounds like we're in agreement. Warriors going to roll tonight. You know, Steve, they're like soccer bets. Like, they call it halftime, full time. And they actually have this for tonight. So it's no point spread. You know, winning at the half, win the game. Golden State Warriors, -175, halftime, full-time.
Yeah, you know, one thing I've noticed in the playoffs,
I think they smoke them, Steve. They're going to come out and smoke them.
Well, the reason I was surprised Cleveland started so fast in game four is we talked about this Friday. Normally, when you really blow a game and finish poorly, that carries over, especially when you're down 0-3. That didn't happen in game four, so who knows? I mean, neither team really finished strong. It was pretty even in the fourth quarter because the game was over, so I don't think one squad really has any momentum tonight over the other one. So it's tough to read that one.
All right, let's talk some NASCAR. Ryan Blaney, didn't see this one coming, Steve. And, you know, I actually figured he was going to be like 80-1, 100-1 or something like that, but he was only in the 30-1 range.
Yeah, he's actually been pretty good in a lot of practice sessions this year. He's run well in some of the cookie cutter tracks. Pocono is a very unique track. It's as big as Talladega and Daytona. It's over 2.5 miles, but it's as flat as Phoenix and some of the 1 mile tracks. Blaney ran well, and I think every single person except for maybe a handful of Kevin Harvick fans was definitely pulling for him at the end. He runs Woods Brothers. Their last win was 2011, upset with Trevor Bayh, who was 100-1 in the Daytona 500 6 years ago. He was only about 30-1, Blaney. He dropped to even 20-1 in some spots by race time. So it actually wasn't as big as an upset as I thought as well. You know, you look at Austin Dillon a few weeks ago. He was 100-1. Stenhouse Jr., when he won, he was probably like 60-1 or so. And that was, you know, on a plate track where it's a little more likely. But yeah, it's amazing. We've had 10 different winners already, Gabe. We could have 16 different winners this season by the cutoff.
That's unbelievable. I know.
Harvick hasn't won, and none of the Gibbs guys have won yet, right? So, yep. I mean, all of those guys could still win. That's three or four guys right there.
Yeah, Gibbs has kind of started to be panicking a little bit now. This is getting serious. Harvick still looking for a win, came close, finished second. You know, NASCAR is like hockey. It's cruel. Kyle Busch dominated, but Blaney.
Yeah, I was going to say, Busch was the one that came close, and that's a really good track for Kenseth as well.
And
but
I
keep in mind,
you,
Carl Edwards isn't driving anymore. You know, they got Suarez, who has not been competitive, so they really only have three drivers now that can win.
We talked about Kurt Busch, and he won last year as a long shot. He was in the 40-1 range this year. He finished fourth. I'm going to tell you, we got to start betting these long shots to come top five. It's been a couple of weeks, Steve. We've nailed a long shot in the top five range.
Yeah, and you look at yesterday, Kevin Harvick lost by 1.14 of a 14 of a thousandth of a 14 hundredths of a second, 0.14 seconds behind him for several laps. You know, so you hate to have a win ticket riding on half a second result after 400 miles. That's why those top fives, top threes, you know, give you a little wiggle room.
And as Steve mentioned, Erik Jones was third. Keselowski was fifth. Okay, speaking of numbers, let's talk a little baseball before we get you out of here. The Steve Merrill Major League Baseball Power Poll rankings, courtesy of covers.com. The Houston Astros still worthy of being number one. But I got to tell you, Steve, I wish I was betting against the Astros more on a daily basis. I saw this trend coming, and I said it on the air the other night. I was like, Houston, you know, I think they're going to stumble for the next couple of days here. And they have. They've lost four of their last six baseball games.
Yeah, they've lost four or six. I barely kept them in number one. But, you know, who am I going to replace them with right now? Exactly. I really don't feel like the Yankees are any better at number two. Colorado's probably playing as well as anybody. They're up to three now, and that's still difficult for me to stomach because I just don't believe it. You know, I've got them one ahead of the Dodgers, actually, from the same division. But, you know, I've been talking about this all year, Gabe. I'm trying to do these ratings based on what's really going on the field. And it's been working out because you look at a team like the Chicago Cubs, who are 10th in my ratings right now, behind the Minnesota Twins, believe it or not. And, you know, as you look, that's how they've played. If they weren't the defending champs, they deserve to be 10th. Everyone feels like they're still the best team in baseball, but they haven't been proving it so far.
Houston Astros, Dallas Keuchel goes on the 10-day DL. They've got various other injuries in the rotation. Their bullpen blew the big lead the other night against Kansas City. We've seen a little, some cracks in the back end right now with Houston. It'll be interesting for them. They just got to tinker, and it's tough. Like, when you get out to this hot start to keep it going all year, and especially when you get this big lead. But with that being stated, I think we have a live dog tonight with the Texas Rangers. You know, the Rangers aren't going to be catching the Astros, but the Rangers are still in contention for a wild card spot. They have Yu Darvish on the hill tonight against Musgrove. Astros minus 120. And the Rangers are heating up right now. They've won four or five coming off the sweep against the Nats.
Yeah, we always talk about momentum in baseball. I mean, the Rangers have it right now. They just swept the Nationals, and they've won four of their last five overall. Houston's lost four of their last six, as you mentioned. So we definitely have a live dog here. You know, I'm not a believer in Texas overall this season. But they do run hot and cold. They did this last year, and it looks like they're heating up right now.
And the Washington Nationals, how the mighty have fallen, Steve. You know, here they are. Earlier in the year, they were number one in your power rankings. Now they're down to five. Bullpen, the bullpen issue is not an issue. It's like an albatross now. Like, they've got to do something about this. You know, the injuries, you know, they're going to be fine because of the division they play in. But nevertheless, the bullpen is a serious problem.
I mean, they're going to have to pick somebody up. They will not win in the postseason with this bullpen. Their ERA is now 4.97, 19 losses and blown saves combined this season. On the road, it's over 6.0, the ERA. But they've got so much offense, Gabe, that, you know, and they've got such a good minor league system as well that they're going to be able to get somebody, I think, at the trade deadline. They get a good closer or a good middle reliever as well. They have as good of an offense as anyone in baseball. And by the way, Houston and Washington going into this week with the top two scoring teams, not a coincidence that they've been at the top of the rankings all year.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't know, Steve. So what about all this off defense wins championship stuff?
I agree.
I don't know. I mean, look at the NBA right now. And I think the future.
Look at the Kansas City Royals a couple years ago, the worst offense in history to win a World Series. And that was all bullpen. You know, you look at how they struggle now that their bullpen isn't pitching well this year. They have no offense still. You can get through the regular season with the offense.
I'm interested to see. We'll get to the playoffs, but it could just be, you know, like teams like the Yankees and the Nationals and the Astros, teams that just club you to death.
Yeah, it's just such a different, you know, that's the seven-game series are just different because they all come down to one run and they pull pitchers in every other inning.
Who won?
I think baseball's a different beast.
It is. You need pitching, but who was the number one offense in baseball last year? Off the top of my head, I would say the Chicago Cubs, right?
Well, they are probably one of the best pitching teams as well, though. I mean, so they were just a dominant team, but the Royals won it the year before, and you know that was about as night and day as far as offense and pitching goes. That was probably the best bullpen in history. And one of probably the weakest offense in recent history
to
win a
championship. Pitching and defense still counts in baseball.
The Giants. I mean, the Giants, those three titles they won over 5 or 6 years, they were pretty much pitching. By the way, about these power rankings, this time last year going into the All-Star break a few weeks from now was the only time all year I didn't have the Cubs number one. The Giants briefly became number one for 1 week in late June last year. And then they came out of the All-Star break and went like 20 games below 500. So we got a lot of season to go here. We're not even at the halfway mark.
Steve Merrill, ProSportsInfo.com, one of the covers experts. Always a pleasure, Steve.
Thanks, Gabe.
Here's Steve Merrill with us. I think the pitching obviously matters in the playoffs, but if you can't hit, you're not going to get to the playoffs. All right, Coach Nick joins us next. Game Time Decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues. Just a quick note, just as me and Steve Merrill were talking about the Houston Astros and the injuries and the problems that they have with their pitching right now. We know Dallas Keuchel's been on and placed on a 10-day DL. We knew that McCullers is banged up, but basically just moments ago, Lance McCullers placed on the DL as well. Trouble in paradise with the Houston Astros right now. Never trouble in Coach Nick's paradise because he loves the game. He's breaking it down. We have game five tonight. I think this is the final NBA game of the year, but I thought Friday was the last game of the year as well. Coach Nick, bballbreakdown.com with us. Coach, it's always a pleasure, my man. How you doing?
Oh, I'm good. I am good, Gabe. Always great to be with you.
So I just had a guest on, and he's a handicapper, and he liked Golden State on Friday. And he told me he was surprised the way Cleveland came out as strongly as they did on Friday. And I told him, I'm not surprised that Cleveland came out strongly. I'm surprised that there was no counterpunch from Golden State ever. You know, the Golden State really, I don't know if it was subconscious, it's human nature. You figure with the 16-0 at stake that they just would have been as focused and pedal to the metal and as if they ever were, but they just didn't seem ready to play on Friday night to me.
Well, I think it was a combination of some factors. First of all, record-setting, all-time first-half scoring binge by the Cavaliers. And it was really hard. A lot of these threes were contested. They were deep. The referees definitely were bad, I think, for both sides. But in that first quarter, it definitely favored the Cavaliers. And once they got back on their heels, the Warriors, then it was kind of game over. It was really hard. Now, if you look in the second half, the game was pretty even. So it was really that initial burst and then into that second quarter where they were still hot that gave them the win. But I don't know. The Warriors, I think, have they lit them up as well. They were on a huge pace of scoring, too. So they came to play for most part, I thought. I just think that they couldn't handle the record-breaking onslaught that probably no one could have predicted.
And really, it seemed like you said, just everything was going in. Everybody, everything was going in. Like it was a perfect storm.
As far as it's like watching one of your shows.
Yeah, exactly. Well, an imperfect storm. Kevin Durant was the only Warrior to have more than 16 points. Curry finished with 14. Didn't score in the first quarter. He was actually a plus-minus 25 in 38 minutes on Friday night. What are you expecting tonight, Coach? Do you expect Curry? I think he was, 4-13 from the field. Him and Durant were a combined 4-13 from three-point range the other night. I'm almost looking at the opposite. I would expect that Golden State gets into a rhythm early, and I think the shots are going to start falling for them.
Yeah, I think it's a combination. Now, the Warriors are at home, and the Cavaliers' role players are on the road. They don't tend to shoot as well just naturally throughout the history of the NBA, so that could be part of it. I do think that we're going to see some more isolation stuff for Steph Curry. They need to get him more on the ball to attack because when he's off the ball, which is what they like to do a lot of, they can rough him up, they can really be physical, and that, you know, he's handling it okay, but why go away from your strength where the referees will be forced to protect Steph Curry a little bit more when he's dribbling the ball? So I would expect to see a little bit more, maybe not as much ISO stuff, but some more pick and roll for Steph, and then probably a little bit more ISO even for Kevin Durant.
What are your thoughts on Draymond Green in this series? He seems to be more concerned with talking than anything else. And from a basketball standpoint, it's pretty clear that the Cavaliers are not worried about hitting a shot, and they're leaving him open, and he's taking the shots. To me, he's just taking way too many threes. I mean, the assists are down right now. He hasn't really ever gotten into a rhythm. He's always in foul trouble, and then conversely, it puts Kerr in a weird spot with his rotation, doesn't it?
Well, the one thing about the three-point shooting, he's been on fire all playoff long, and he's still shooting pretty well in the finals. So I don't think I have an issue there. It seemed like he kept everything under control for the first three games. Everything was going really well for them. In game four, you know, you're going to get at least one of those games from Draymond where he kind of loses his mind, whether or not he was justified, because the referees just didn't have very good control over the game. Again, both sides. And so that just leads to a lot of agita and insanity from people, especially from Draymond, who wants to do that as it is anyway. So I think defensively he's been pretty good, though. I mean, he's still anchoring that defense. He couldn't do as much because they rotate well, and then, boom, they were still hitting those skip pass threes. So I anticipate Draymond being at home, being a little bit more with the home cooking and sleeping in his own bed. I think he'll probably be a little bit less, you know, of the crazy Draymond. And if they can get that from him, that'll be enough to win the game tonight.
I'm not saying everybody, but I've seen some out there who aren't really ready to give Kevin Durant his due. He's going to get a ring, but he joined Golden State to do it. And I'm not buying into this argument. Kevin Durant's their best player. The guy's averaging 34.2 points per game. I mean, do they want Kevin Durant to leave now? Are they doing Kevin Durant a favor by letting him participate on this team? No. You know what I mean? He's their best damn player. I mean, what do you feel about this? And I'm not saying everybody says this, but what do you say to the critics to Kevin Durant that he rode the coattails of the Warriors?
I mean, all I can tell you is what you said is that he's been the best player on the floor. I think, LeBron is getting a little bit closer, but up and through three games, he was without question the best player on the floor. And granted, a lot of it's opened up because of Steph. A lot of it's opened up just because of the way they play their offense, because he played with a point guard that was very dynamic, but it was easier to make their shots a lot harder because of the offensive system. So, you know, he just simply, for the first 8 or 9 years of his career, you know, had been stuck in a system where he clearly just wanted something more. And it just happened to be that there's a whole bunch of other great players on the team as well. But I'm convinced that it's more about the philosophy and the style of play that's making everybody so good. And you take all these individual pieces on other teams that play different ways, and they probably aren't as great as they are. And it's him bringing everybody else up, in my opinion, along with Steph, but no question. And I think, obviously, he made the right decision. He's never been playing better than he ever has, than he has in his career.
Coach, we've seen in the National Football League, basically for the last 6-7 years, every year the NFL breaks its own record for passing attempts. And, you know, the offenses are more spread out, more of a college approach. It's funny, the NFL mimics college, not the other way around, actually. So they keep on breaking the record for passing. NBA seems to be going in the same direction with the three ball, in which more and more three balls are being shot, and your teams are just deciding, we'll win or lose like this. We're going to take 45 three-point shots. We're going to take 50 three-point shots. Some of the old guys, once again, the critics, they're saying, this isn't basketball. Where's the defense? This is a travesty. This isn't the NBA Finals. What do you say to these people, and are we watching the future of basketball right now?
I mean, yeah, this is definitely where we're going. I've always felt like if you can create an offense that generates 50 good threes, then shoot 50 good threes. And that's really the key. And when it gets to be problematic is when you start getting these up and down, you know, one pass out of a transition three-pointer and that bricks, and then they come down and brick a three. Now you got 2-3 possessions in a row, and it becomes it looks like a pickup game. That's what you have to be worried about. And it never used to be that issue in the NBA, and we do see that a little bit. But I think that there's going to have to be a curtailing. At some point, we're going to figure out what the best balance is. And I suspect that we're getting really close, if not having to go down a little bit. I would be shocked if 10 years from now, that progression of three-point attempts continues to go up. I think we're getting to that top of that spectrum there where we're going to start, you know, stop seeing the increase.
Yeah, and look, we've only got like 2 minutes here, Coach, but look at the Toronto Raptors. They play defense during the regular season. Coach Casey preaches defense. They get to the playoffs. They play an ISO offense. They don't have any three-ball shooters, and they get killed. And it's like, all right, yeah, we play defense. Yeah, good for you. You scored 97 points. You know, okay. And Masai Ujiri said after, we've got to change the style that we play. I really do, you know, see this progression. All right, so before we get you out of here, I know you've been so deep, and you're doing a video right now as we speak on the Cavaliers for Cavs fans that have been riding you throughout the playoffs. 3-on-3 in the Olympics, Coach. You're a purist, you're a coach. Love it, hate it, good for the game, bad. What's your take?
Well, you know, in any kind of scoring opportunity in a five-on-five game, it's really just three players. It's the cutter, the passer, and the shooter. So in reality, we do a lot of three-on-three in practice, and I'm sure that, you know, NBA teams do that as well. So it's really just a smaller component of, like, what the NBA, what basketball is. So it's a three-man, you know, when they come together. So I like it. I grew up with, like, three-on-three tournaments all over the place, and so it was always kind of fun to do that. You can't help on defense. You help, and that's it. It's a layup. So that's when it becomes really interesting, because if you play a team-oriented three-on-three, then you should be able to score quite a bit if you have any bit of talent. So I think it's going to be really fun.
I don't know if NBA players are going to play yet. It's 3 years away. LeBron James says he isn't. Some other guys, I know the Greek Freak says, I got two brothers. I want to play, the three of us.
Well, you're, that would be
pretty
awesome.
Cool, right? Like,
yeah. Oh, I know. It would be fun. It would be loose. It would be, you know, I think that would be interesting. It's also because it's not up and down, like, you know, fast-paced in a fast break style. You probably get some different dynamics. And, you know, I would really like to see it. I think it'd be really, really fun. And
yeah, and
I'm
me too.
Curious.
I want to see, too, like, how do you approach it? All right, we're just going to put Curry and Thompson. We're going to bomb for twos, like, instead of the three type of thing. And I used to play in the NBA, hoop it up all the time. So I like to see this as well. Yeah, Nick, it's always a pleasure, Coach. And great stuff, as always. Enjoy the game tonight.
You got it. I will. You too. Thanks.
There's Coach Nick with us. Take a quick break. We come back with Paul Bovey, talk some props. Game time decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I want to get back to the NBA Finals, but this three-on-three Olympic stuff, I haven't talked to anyone that hated it. I took one little tweet pot shot. I said, what's next, road hockey? But the fact of the matter is, everybody plays three-on-three basketball. Kids grew up playing one-on-one, two-on-two, three-on-three. I rarely played five-on-five games, man. I play every day. That's what people do. And I want to find out who's going to be playing in this stuff. Paul Bovey joins us right now, and Paul's a huge basketball fan. Paul, three-on-three Olympics, will you bet on that?
I'll bet on two cockroaches outside your studio, and which one will make it underneath the door. How's that?
remember John Gotti? There's a story, so the cops were, they had wiretaps on Gotti at the club, the social club and everything, right? So I guess Gotti liked to bet, and he didn't win a lot. So they said that, you know, it's a great thing. I read the book, actually, and Gotti's alone, Paul, in a room, and he starts trashing the place, all right, over a loss. And they said, I don't know what he's freaking out for. He owns the book, right? But he's flipping out that he lost the book. And I never forget the line. They said Gotti and his boys would bet two cockroaches on the wall. Like, this guy would bet on anything.
Bergen, I think it was the Bergen Hunt and Fish Club or something over in Queens somewhere. Yeah. Quite familiar with it.
Cavs and Warriors tonight. Hey, I was wrong on Friday. I thought the Warriors would tattoo them and it would be over and the Cavs would roll over. They didn't. I go back to the well tonight. I think the Warriors tattoo them.
It comes down to three-point shooting. This official set the tone the other night. They sent the Cavaliers to the free throw line an ungodly amount of times in the first quarter, and then the Cavs turn around and they start making their threes. It starts paving the way for open shots, and they get very successful at it. And
maybe you should answer that.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I put this phone off, and I should have powered it down. Sorry about that, guys.
It just wouldn't stop ringing. All right. Everything is about the three-point shot right now. And they hit 24 of them the other night. They're not hitting 24 three-point shots on the road tonight, which leads me to the over here, Paul. You know, I'm talking to the cameraman. He's like, how the hell do you not take the under? It's up to 233 at his book right now. And I said, yeah, but how do you bet the under the way this series is going?
Yeah, how do you bet the under? These teams have been lighting it up. And again, the other night, the scoring slows down and they still end up in the 240s, whatever. So this is a really tough take on the under, especially with the officials leaning towards calls in favor of the Cavaliers. Because let's face it, the NBA, the networks, they want this to get to another game. it would make for great intrigue to see a 3-2 series going back to Cleveland, and at that point, those ratings would explode.
Yeah, I know. It's interesting. You're right. The league would like to send this back Thursday night on TV. They do. One thing, though, we've talked about this. Let's take a look at some of these props a little bit. So Kyrie Irving goes off. They go back to Ohio when he scored 38 and 40 points. Yet he's always put up more at home, Paul. You and I both know this. When he goes on the road, he doesn't explode for the 38 and 40. He might give you 21, 23, 24 or so. His prop tonight is 28 and a half. As far as top score in the game tonight, LeBron's plus 175, Durant's plus 200, Curry's plus 350, Irving's plus 350. I don't love it as much as I did in the earlier games, but I'm going to go back to the well with Kevin Durant at plus 200. The only thing is, you know that James and Irving are going to score. They have to score. The Warriors distributed around a little bit more. But with that being stated, you know, I think Durant steps up. The guy's averaging 34 points a game in the finals. I think he just sort of puts the icing on his MVP cake tonight. And then conversely, we got Steph Curry. You know, he really struggled the other night, man. 14 points. He had 11 points last year in one of the games. So Curry should bounce back. His prop is 28 and a half tonight.
I'm leaning to Curry here, and I'm leaning to Curry at taking plus 350 as the high score. Gabe, we spoke about this early on, and we discussed value. And there was value in Kyrie Irving at home at plus 500.
Yep.
He came up 1 point shy of LeBron James in that game three. And then he scores 40 points last game, and he's the number one scorer. Well, here we go. Curry is back at home in Oakland. He shoots 46% from distance, only 36% on the road. And he's due for a bounce-back game here. You're getting plus 350 with arguably one of the best players in the NBA who's under siege right now because he's being outplayed by the opposing point guard. So his stock is down, and I think he's going to show the world that he's still the kingpin.
I haven't liked Draymond Green's game all that much in this final. He's been okay. You know, he hasn't had to be in the first three games. But he's shooting too much for my liking. You know, the assists are way down. He averages like 7 assists usually in the regular season. He's averaging under 5 now here. He's shooting the 3. He's only hitting 25% of the shots. If you've noticed, Paul, the last couple of games, they're just leaving him wide open. They're like, whatever, dude, take that shot because we'd rather have a chance of you taking it. But I like to see him slash to the basket and then create something else instead of lazily just settling for the 3 all the time. But with that being stated, I expect Draymond to have a lot of energy tonight back in Oakland. He wants to stick it to these guys. What do you think about Draymond? And from what I understand, you think Draymond has a big game tonight?
I do. And actually, I need him to get more than 10.5 rebounds for my series bet, which is over 49.5. And I think he will get that. He's had a couple off games, and game 2 and game 3, he was in foul trouble, and that held him down. Game 1, he was 3-for-12 from the field. And, you know, to that point, Gabe, Draymond's not the guy you're going to put in the corner and tell him not to shoot. He's really not going to pay attention to that. He is going to continue to shoot the rock and try to score. And I think he's the top assist guy, averaged 6.6 during the regular season, had one game here. Game 1, where he only had 2, which was his low for the year, except for one instance where he had 1 during the year. So I think assists, rebounds, points, you're likely to go over 28.5 here, and I think he's a play.
Rebound points and assists combined. Okay, we've only got a couple of minutes, I think about 2 minutes here. Team totals, Cavaliers, 111.5. Golden State Warriors, 119.5. Any thoughts?
The Warriors, with the exception of last game, have been lighting it up and lighting it up at will. Okay? I think they're going to score points. It's only a question of whether the Cavaliers push the scoring, which I believe that they will. And if that's the case, Golden State's going to end up in the high 120s. Look, Golden State last game kept making little runs, but Cleveland kept holding them at bay because the Warriors were not hitting their threes from distance. I think they ended up 11 of 39. That's uncharacteristic for the Warriors, and they're not going to repeat that here at home in Oakland. They'll shoot better, 14.5 over and under on three-point shots. They're going to end up with 18 or 19 here, possibly even 20. They're going to score over 119.5, 120 points.
I kind of like the Cavs over 111.5 as well. My only concern is if the game gets out of hand and we get into garbage time in the fourth quarter. That's my concern about the total, but you know, like you said, it's hard to get in front of this. All right, we got about 60 seconds here. A prop that I stumbled across, at it's minus 175, but with that being stated, I think it's going to hit. It's a halftime, full-time, so no point spread. Warriors leading at the half. Warriors win the basketball game.
I think it's a good prop. You know, one of the series plays I took, I tried to steal one, as you're doing here, and I took the Warriors to win game one and then win the series. I only had to lay $1.80 on that as opposed to laying the series line, which was anywhere from 260 to 320. So I get what you're trying to accomplish here, and I think you'll get it because I think the Warriors will basically take this wire to wire. It may get close at times, but it's a wire to wire job.
Paul Bovey with us. All right, Paul. So I imagine in about 10 seconds after you're gone, you're going to call whoever just called you and said, what the hell's wrong with you? I'm on TV.
It was Chris David. I'm going to strangle him.
That was Vegas Insider. Yeah. What up, Chris? All right. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, dude.
It was Paul Bovey with us. Take a quick break and come back with our plays and props. All right, it's time for our plays of the day and what I believe will be the final NBA game of the season. Yes, I said the same thing on Friday. I was wrong. We're going to lay the 8.5 points with the Golden State Warriors. We're going to go over the number. It was 230.5. I understand the number's climbing a lot of spots right now. Halftime, full-time. This is a shout-out to my boy Vartanian. A little soccer play. Halftime, full-time. Warriors lead at the half. Warriors win the game. You don't have to worry about point spreads. Minus 175. Kevin Durant, high score of the night, plus 200. Little Major League Baseball. Colorado Rockies are plus 130, man. How do you not take the Colorado Rockies plus 130? Texas Rangers plus 100 with Yu Darvish on the hill. Houston Astros have lost four of their last six games. The Rangers have won four or five. I think we got a live dog in a plus 100 range with Yu Darvish. And, hey, this is kind of contrarian. Tanaka's been terrible as of late. I think Tanaka pitches well tonight. Yankees get it done. Other than that, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.